Om Agyana Jamanandasya Jana Jana Sulakaya Taksu Sumilatanjena Tasmai Sri Rade Namah Sri Chaitanya Manavistam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Sayam Rupakadamayam Vedati Sarapandandikam Vanshakalpaturbhyascha Kripasindubhayevacha Pratitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namah Namah. We've been hearing the prayers of the residents of Jambadweep. And we heard yesterday how Lakshmi Devi glorified the Lord as the protector. And Vaivaswatamanu glorified the Lord as the maintainer. And now we're going to hear some prayers offered by to the Matsya, to the Korma avatar, Korma Sarira. The Lord comes in the form of a tortoise, a turtle. So how amazing. God, when we conceive or think about God, usually people do not consider any form, practically speaking, because people think that, how do people conceive of God? In some traditions, they say that if you ascribe a form to God, it's a great offense. And other people say that if one ascribes a form to God, that we can't really do that because he's beyond our ascribing. So that can come to almost an agnosticism. And the one that says if we ascribe a form to God, what is that saying? That's really saying that if we with our own tiny, finite brains say God must be like this, and he must be like that, and then we will limit God. Because he, by definition, is infinite, and we, by definition, are finite. So both those positions, that one cannot say anything about the form of God, a form of God, and one cannot ascribe a form to God, are simultaneously true and not true. They are true in the sense, again, if we place a concept of God or a concept upon God that's our concept, then we are limiting him, and that's inappropriate, improper, and inaccurate. But if one says, on the other hand, that God cannot say, I am like this, or I am like that, give some definiteness to our concept of God, then if one says that God cannot do that, that is limiting him. So Krishna comes for a particular pastime that's described in the eighth canto of the Bhagavatam. He comes in the form of a tortoise, but it's not just a turtle in some pet shop or a tortoise in some lake. Not at all. Krishna's body, regardless of the form he comes in, is fully transcendental, glorious, and beautiful. So the first verse of the prayers of Aryama, the chief resident of Haranmaya Varsha, that place where Lord Tortoise Korma Sarir is worshipped, we'll read those prayers. And in Prabhupada's purport, he says something about the form of a turtle, when the Lord takes the form of a tortoise. So Sukadeva Goswami continued to describe, in Haranmaya Varsha, the Supreme Lord Vishnu lives in the form of a tortoise, Korma Sarir. This most dear and beautiful form is always worshipped there in devotional service by Aryama, the chief resident of Haranmaya Varsha, along with the other inhabitants of that land. They chant the following hymns. Here's Prabhupada's purport. Each devotee regards a particular form of the Lord as most dear. Because of an atheistic mentality, some people think that the tortoise, boar, and fish incarnations of the Lord are not very beautiful. Of course, when we look at a turtle, we don't think, oh, this is the most beautiful turtle. Look at the smile. Look at those beautiful eyes. But when the Lord takes on the form of a turtle, or a boar, or a fish, that form, due to the fact that it is that whatever form the Lord is in, it is composed of the spiritual energy, not of the material energy. So that form is completely transcendental and so attractive and wonderful. So it is atheistic to think that if the Lord comes as a tortoise, that it's either not possible or it's not beautiful or something. No. Not understanding the potency of the Lord. They do not know that any form of the Lord is always the fully opulent personality of Godhead. So this concept, this idea must be in place here in the fifth canto, as it must be in place in the sixth canto, and in the seventh canto. In the seventh canto, the Lord will come as Lord Nrisingadev, Narasingha, half lion, half man. Yes, God comes like that, the personification of God's anger, and rips apart the envious Hiranyakashipu. So beautiful, Lord Nrisingadev, fully transcendental, and everything he does is perfect, good, beyond the morality or immorality of the material world. And then the Lord comes as Korma, Matsya, and we heard in the second or the third canto about the Lord coming as Varahadev in the form of a boar. So these forms of the Lord are very difficult to understand. So we have to get into place that whatever form the Lord comes in is fully transcendental and has really nothing to do with the material world. We must get that in place by the time we reach the tenth canto, because if the Lord coming in the form of Varahadev, a boar, is hard to understand, still more difficult to understand is the Lord coming in the form of Krishna with two arms as a cowherd boy who walks in the forest of Braja without shoes, herding the cows and playing his flute and playing with his friends. That is the most difficult to understand incarnation of God. And that is the Purna Sarup, the complete manifestation of Krishna. So therefore the Bhagavatam is purifying us and setting these concepts in place to prepare us to hear and relish the pastimes of Krishna, Goloka Vrindavan, in the 10th canto. Because those are so wonderful. Those are the source of all bliss. Those are the complete manifestation of the Lord. So since one of his opulences, the Lord's opulences, Prabhupada continues, is infinite beauty, all the Lord's incarnations are very beautiful and are appreciated as such by devotees. Non-devotees, however, think that the Lord Krishna's incarnations are ordinary material creatures, and therefore they distinguish between the beautiful and the not beautiful in the Lord's incarnations. A certain form of the Lord is worshipped by a particular devotee because he loves to see the form of the Lord, that form of the Lord. He has something in him, some eternal relationship within him that makes him love a particular form of the Lord. So now we'll hear the hymns of Aryama, a great devotee in Haranmaya Varsha. O my Lord, I offer my respectful obeisances unto you, who have assumed the form of a tortoise. You are the reservoir of all transcendental qualities, and being entirely untinged by matter. So he has all transcendental qualities. Although in the form of a tortoise, he's not a tortoise. He's the Lord, but in that form, and he has all transcendental qualities. And being entirely untinged by matter, no touch of matter can even get close to him. His form, again, is fully transcendental. You are perfectly situated in pure goodness. Sarva sattva guna vasheshanan, you know that his form consists of sudha sattva, pure goodness, transcendental energy. Now our forms consist of the material energy. This is material energy, dead matter. This is also dead matter, but seemingly alive due to the presence of the soul, which is spiritual. Tatasta shakti. But Krishna's form is composed of Satchidananda, Anadi, Radhi, Govinda, Sarva, Karana, Karanam, Satchidananda, Vigraha. His form is composed of eternally bliss and knowledge. So therefore, to be in the presence of the Lord's form is the greatest fortune. So your form, you are situated perfectly in pure goodness, pure spiritual energy. You move here and there in the water, but no one can discern your position. Now, how to actually understand Krishna will be explained in later prayers. Because of your transcendental position, you are not limited by past, present, and future. That is the meaning of God. He's unlimited. You are present, so unlimited in time, past, present, and future. We are limited in time. We cannot conceive of anything beyond past, present, and future. We cannot conceive eternity. But Krishna is fully situated in eternity, not limited by the time factor, kala shakti. You are present everywhere as the shelter of all things, and therefore I offer my respectful obeisances to you again and again. So here again, Krishna the protector, Krishna the maintainer, Krishna the shelter, Krishna the one who is transcendental. All these concepts, because religionists, what to speak of atheists and agnostics. Atheists say there is no God. Agnostics say you cannot say anything about God. But the theists, if they have a dim awareness of God, they can say a little about God, that he is the creator, the controller, the origin of everything. But those who have the deepest, most intimate understanding, those great sages, can say so much. So gradually we are hearing the different qualities of the Supreme Lord. So he is the maintainer of everyone. He is unlimited. Whatever form he is in is transcendental. He is the shelter of all things. He is our shelter at all times, in all places. He is the one that is maintaining us and keeping us alive, maintaining our existence. And therefore, Ariyama says, and therefore, because you are the great Lord and I am a tiny, insignificant soul, therefore I offer my respectful obeisances to you again and again. I'm not proud, he's saying. I know that I'm dependent upon you, and therefore I offer you my obeisances. Here's Prabhupada's purport. In the Brahma Samhita, it is said, Goloka eva satya kalatma bhuta. That all, the Lord always remains in Goloka, the topmost planet in the spiritual world. So God is in the spiritual world, always. But yet, he is not only in the spiritual world, because if he was in the spiritual world and he wasn't in the material world, then how would he be omnipresent and all-pervading? That would mean he would be limited. He's in one place, but not another place. So he remains in the spiritual world, but yet at the same time he's all-pervading. So this is actually inconceivable. If something is all-pervading, how could he be in a specific place? If something is in a specific place, how could that thing be all-pervading? If this book is here, it's not everywhere. If it's not everywhere, how could it be here? If it is everywhere, how could it be just here? But Krishna confounds ordinary logic. He has achintya shakti, inconceivable potency. So he is in one's place, spiritual, but so much potency that he is also all-pervading. At the same time, he is all-pervading. This paradox, what does a paradox mean? What is a paradox, Professor Scott?
Yes, I was about to say, paradox, yes.
Something that seems contradictory.
Yes, it is contradictory. It's two contradictory things. And Krishna, he confounds paradoxes. He has a chintya shakti, means his power, his potency is so great that he can do inconceivable things very easily. He can do paradoxical things too easily. So this paradox, to reconcile paradoxes, to do inconceivable things, is only possible for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is full of all opulences, all power. That is the meaning of God, that he can do it. He's all powerful. He's not limited by what we think is paradoxical. The Lord's all-pervasiveness is confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna states, Ishvara Sarvabhutanam Riddhishe Arjuna Tishtati. The Supreme Lord is situated in everyone's heart, O Arjuna. So he's in everyone's heart. God is in everyone's heart. Elsewhere in the Bhagavad Gita 15:15, he says, Sarvasya Chaham Riddhe Sanavisto Matam Smritam Gyanamaponam Cha. I'm seated in everyone's heart, and from me comes remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. Therefore, although the Lord is present everywhere, he cannot be seen with ordinary eyes. He's everywhere, he's in everyone's heart, but yet, no one can see him. This is a puzzle. He's everywhere, but yet we can't see him with ordinary eyes. If we have ordinary eyes, we cannot see him. But if premanjana charita bhakti valochanaena, if our eyes are decorated with a salve, smeared with the salve of love, then not only do we see God, there is no time when we don't see God, because he is everywhere. But it is our defective vision, that it is loveless vision, it is imperfect vision, that disallows us from seeing him. Where there's one, Prabhupada would respond to the question, like, could you show me God, or even could you see God? Sometimes people would ask, challenge him, can you see God? And Prabhupada sometimes would answer, yes. And one time someone said, then where is he? And he says, you are in the way. Prabhupada said, your consciousness. It's the consciousness that dictates what we see. One time in Bombay, one devotee who was from California, Southern California, said, Prabhupada, this Bombay, it looks just like Southern California. And Prabhupada replied, you have brought it with you. Because you have that consciousness. Everywhere you look, you'll see Southern California. But if you have love, that consciousness, love for Krishna, everywhere you look, you'll see Krishna. So it's a matter of the consciousness. So without that consciousness, we demand to see God. And that is, Prabhupada would point out, that is absurd. Any more than if we demand to see a billionaire, come here, I want to see this billionaire, and then I'll believe he exists. Or I want to see the president, or if I want to see this king, or this prince, or that prince. Who are we, tiny, insignificant, unqualified, impoverished souls, to demand? When we become wealthy spiritually, then seeing Krishna will be natural. Therefore, although the Lord is present everywhere, he cannot be seen with ordinary eyes. Ordinary eyes means eyes that don't have love. As Ariyama says, the Lord is anupalakshitastana. No one can locate him. This is the greatness of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Unless we have love for him, we cannot see him anywhere. No matter how hard we try, we can smash every atom looking for the subest of submost atomic particles, and we will still not see how God is everywhere within everything. And if we have love for him, we won't be able to see how anyone cannot see that he's everywhere. This is the greatness of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He only reveals himself as he likes. Text 31. My dear Lord, Ariyama continues, this visible cosmic manifestation is a demonstration of your own creative energy. Since the countless varieties of forms within this cosmic manifestation are simply a display of your external energy, this Virata Rupa, this universal body, is not your real form. Except for a devotee in transcendental consciousness, no one can perceive your actual form. Therefore, I offer my respectful obeisances unto you. Although you are everywhere, the material energy, Maya Shakti, is none different from you, yet it is not your actual form. No one can perceive your actual form except for a devotee in transcendental consciousness. So although the material energy and how the Lord supports and pervades the material world, Ekam Senas Titol Jagat, although that is not different from him, yet he is different from that. Prabhupada's purport, we'll read some of that. A fire consists of three elements, heat and light, which are the energy of the fire and the fire itself. Anyone can understand that the original fire is the reality and that the heat and light are simply the fire's energy. Heat and light are the formless energies of fire, and in that sense they are unreal. Unreal in the sense of they don't have independent existence. That is one definition of what real means. It has independent existence. It's not depending on something else. Real in the sense it's tangible. It is completely substantial. So the heat and the light, their existence depends on the fire. So similarly, everything in the material world, it is unreal in the sense that it has no independent existence. It is all the energy of the Lord, and it depends upon the Lord. Only the fire has form, and therefore it is the real form of heat and light. As Krishna states in Bhagavad Gita, Maya tatamidam sarvam jagadavyakta murtina. By me, in my unmanifested form, this entire universe is pervaded. Thus the impersonal conception of the Lord is like the expansion of heat and light from a fire. So Krishna is everywhere through his energy. In the Bhagavad Gita, the Lord also says, Matstani Savabhutani Natchaham Teshvavastita. The entire material creation is resting on Krishna's energy, either material, spiritual, or marginal. But because his form is absent from the expansion of his energy, he is not personally present. So what's the example that's usually given? The sun. The sun and the sunlight. So the sun may be in the room in the sense that its energy, the sunlight, is in the room, but the sun itself is clearly not in the room. Because why? How do we know that the sun itself, because we're still alive. If the sun itself was in the room, we'd be burnt to what? Very good. Very good. We would be burnt to ashes, minimum ashes, and the ashes would be burnt to the ash of an ash, be vaporized or something. So the sun is present in the room, but through his energy, its energy. And similarly, Krishna is present everywhere through his energy. And in that sense, the whole material creation depends upon him. He is not personally present. So in other words, the material energy is not him per se, although it is not different from him in the same way that the sunlight is not different from the sun. This inconceivable expansion of the Lord's energy is called achintya shakti. Literally, achintya shakti means inconceivable energy. Therefore, no one can understand the real form of the Lord without becoming his devotee. 32. My dear Lord, Narayana continues, you manifest your different energies in countless forms, as living entities born within wombs, from eggs and from perspiration, as plants and trees that grow out of the earth, as all living entities, both moving and standing, including the demigods, the learned sages and the pittas, as outer space, as the higher planetary systems containing the heavenly planets, and as the planet Earth with its hills, rivers, seas, oceans, and islands. Indeed, all the stars and planets are simply manifestations of your different energies. But originally, you are one without a second. There is no competitor to you. Everything is resting upon you. Everything that exists is a manifestation of your energy. This entire cosmic manifestation is therefore not false. We say it's not real in the sense that it has no independent existence, but we also say it's not false. It has existence, but not independent existence. It's not illusion. It's not that it has no existence, but it is simply a temporary manifestation of your inconceivable energy. It's always changing. So therefore, again, Aryama is saying is that everything is dependent upon you. This is what it means. When we say God, this is one of the qualities, characteristics that we are referring to, that everything simply depends on him and is resting upon him, yet he is separate. Text 33. O my Lord, your name, form, and bodily features are expanded in countless forms. No one can determine exactly how many forms exist. Yet you yourself, in your incarnation, as the learned scholar Kapiladeva, have analyzed the cosmic manifestation as containing 24 elements. So although there are unlimited aspects of the Lord's energy within this world, they have been divided by the great sage, the incarnation of the Lord Kapila Muni that we heard about in the third canto. They have the elements have been counted within the material world and said to be 24. And that philosophy is called Sankhya philosophy, which divides the material manifestation into its elements. Therefore, if one is interested in Sankhya philosophy, by which he can enumerate the different truths, he must hear it from you. Unfortunately, non-devotees simply count the different elements and remain ignorant of your actual form. I offer my respectful obeisances unto you. So this material world is a constantly shifting, changing ocean of material forms. We can take a picture of it and we imagine that this is what the world is like. But if we took a picture 2 seconds later, another picture, it would be completely different. And another 7 seconds later, it would be completely different. Like the ocean with its waves always shifting. The material world is like that. So therefore, it's so frustrating for the living entity who is looking for a stable shelter. And in this material world, it's always changing. We get used to one thing, and then suddenly something happens. And then our whole concept of reality falls apart. when we go into what's called a cognitive disequilibrium. So the materialistic scientists even, they're studying the different forms, these ever-shifting, changing forms in the material world. But they do not understand what is maintaining all those forms. That they cannot see. And that is the Lord. And therefore, Ariyama offers his obeisances to the Lord. Prabhupada's purport, part of it will read, "For billions of years, changes take place in the material creation, until at last the whole universe is dissolved and remains in an unmanifested state. Constant change and destruction, bhutra bhutra paliyate, is perpetually going on in nature. Yet the material scientists want to study natural laws without knowing the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the background of nature. Not only that, he is the one forcing the continuous change. Just try and make something that doesn't change. Anything that doesn't either grow or degenerate or maintain after maintaining for some time." No, the material, very nature of the material world, of time interplaying with the material energy, is changing. It forces change, and change ultimately means destruction. As Krishna states in the Bhagavad Gita, Maya Dakshena Prakriti Suyate Satcharacharan Hetuna Nena Kantaya Jagat Vipiti Vartate. This material nature is working under my direction. This is what it's making the whole universe tick. And it is producing all moving and unmoving beings. By its rule, the material nature's rule, this manifestation is created and annihilated again and again. And that material nature is working under Krishna's direction. So therefore, Ariyama doesn't proudly say either there's no God, or he doesn't say no one can say anything about God, even God cannot say anything about himself, or he doesn't say that I am powerful. No, he simply understands reality, that we are tiny and insignificant, and God is great, and he offers obeisance. So Ariyama is teaching us that this material world is shifting and changing always, but every part, element, aspect of the shifting, changing material world is resting upon Krishna. Text 34, the next set of prayers. Sukadeva Goswami said, "Dear King, the Supreme Lord, in his boar incarnation, who accepts all sacrificial offerings," in this boar incarnation, Brahadev, who is the personification of the of Vedic sacrifices, accepts. He is the Jagya Purusha, who accepts all sacrifices. He has been spoken of in the third canto, in regard to the killing of Hiranyaksha by Lord Varahadeva. So he is the one who accepts all sacrificial offerings. He lives in the northern part of Jambadeep. There in the tract of land known as Uttara Kuruvarsha, Mother Earth and all the other inhabitants worship him with unfailing devotional service by repeatedly chanting the following Upanishad mantra. Om Namo Bhagavate Mantra Tatfalingaya Jagya Kritatve Maha Dvaravaya Vaya Mahapurushaya Namakarma Suklaya Triyugaya Namaste. O Lord, we offer our respectful obeisances unto you as the gigantic person. Simply by chanting mantras, we shall be able to understand you fully. You are jagya, sacrifice, and you are the kratu, the ritual. Therefore, all the ritualistic ceremonies of sacrifice are part of your transcendental body, and you are the only enjoyer of all sacrifices. Your form is composed of transcendental goodness. Again, transcendental goodness, your form. And you are known as Triyuga, because in Kali Yuga you appeared as a concealed incarnation, and because you always fully possess three pairs of opulences. So Prabhupada chooses to speak in his purport on the Lord's name as Triyuga, and because that means he comes in three out of the four different yugas or ages, because in the fourth age he comes in a hidden way, the Channa avatar, as explained in the 11th canto. So Prabhupada will speak on Triyuga, meaning Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the incarnation for this age of Kali, and is confirmed in many places throughout the Puranas, the Mahabharata, the Srimad Bhagavatam, the Upanishads. The summary of his appearance is given in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila 699, as follows. Kali Yuge Lilavata Nakari Bhagavan Atta Eva Triyuga Kori Kahi Taranam. In this age of Kali, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Bhagavan, does not appear as an incarnation, Lila Avatar, an incarnation to display pastimes. Therefore, he is known as Triyuga. Unlike other incarnations, Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appears in this age of Kali as a devotee of the Lord. Therefore, he is called a concealed incarnation, Chanavatar. So the Lord himself comes as a devotee to teach us how to develop our devotion to Krishna. So here is more prayers to Varaha. You are everywhere, because in the last set of prayers he's described how the Lord is everywhere but he is unseen. So you reveal yourself. How could one actually see him? Because naturally, if there's God, we want to see him. We may be unqualified, but still we want to see him. We want to perceive him, his existence. We want to know him, and ultimately want to love him, and have a deep relationship with him, naturally. So how to get Krishna to reveal himself to us? Translation. By manipulating a fire-generating stick, there's a runny piece of wood, matna, a piece of wood for used to produce fire. There's a way to, just by rubbing sticks together, even to produce fire, or we coat it. A match with some chemicals or something. By manipulating a fire-generating stick, great saints and sages can bring forth the fire lying dormant within wood. In the same way, O Lord, those expert in understanding the absolute truth try to see you in everything. The Lord is in the wood, fire is in the wood, the sunlight is stored in wood, in oil, and all kinds of fuels. So fire is in there, but it takes a particular methodology to bring it out. So similarly, those expert in understanding the absolute truth, they can see the Lord in everything, just like the fire is within all kinds of wood. So they try to see you in everything, even in their own bodies. Yet you remain concealed. You are not to be understood by indirect processes involving mental or physical activities, because you are self-manifest. You are self-manifest. You don't have to, you only reveal yourself when you desire. Only when you see that a person is wholeheartedly engaged in searching for you do you reveal yourself, not partially heartedly, but full-heartedly, wholeheartedly, when one is a full-hearted devotee giving himself fully to understanding God, then Krishna will reveal himself. Therefore, I offer my respectful obeisances unto you. The objects, this is text 37. The objects of material enjoyment, sound, form, taste, touch, and smell, the objects of the senses, the activities of the senses. The controllers of sensory activities, the demigods, the body, eternal time, and egotism, are all creations of your material energy. Those whose intelligence has become fixed by perfect execution of mystic yoga can see that all these elements result from the actions of your external energy. So by practicing mystic yoga, one can understand that everything comes from Krishna's energy. They can see your transcendental form. They can see behind everything is the super soul. They can see your transcendental form as the super soul in the background of everything. This is the result of pure vision that is attained by practice of mystic yoga. Therefore, I repeatedly offer my respectful obeisances unto you. So Krishna is the cause of all causes, and if one gets some qualification, he can see him as such. O Lord, you do not desire the creation, maintenance, or annihilation of this material world, but you perform these activities for the conditioned souls by your creative energy. Exactly as a piece of iron moves under the influence of a lodestone, inert matter moves when you glance over the total material energy. Purport. Sometimes the question arises why the Supreme Lord has created this material world. So he creates the whole material world, and the purpose of it is for us to learn to see him, to learn to love him, but then he makes himself invisible. And there's so much suffering in the material world. So why? Why does he create this material world, which is so full of suffering for the living entities entrapped within it? The answer given herein is that the Supreme Personality of Godhead does not wish to create this material world just to inflict suffering on the living entities. The Supreme Lord creates this world only because the conditioned souls want to enjoy it. So this material world is based by Krishna's mercy. Krishna creates it in the same way that a king creates a prison house. Or the government creates a prison. It's not that the government wants the prison house to be there. And the prisoners in the prison house may be foolishly thinking, why has the government put me in here? As if it was the government's fault that they were in there. But actually, why are they in there? Because they've acted improperly. And therefore, in that sense, they force the government to create the prison house. So similarly, in one sense, we have forced Krishna to maintain, create, be all-pervading in the material world because of our enjoying independent spirit that we wish to turn our back on him. Krishna, bhule se jiva nadirate bahimuk ata eva, therefore mayatare. Therefore, because we have turned our back on Krishna, mayatare samsareta duk, it creates this whole system, miserable system of the material world where there is always death and misery. So because of the actions, because of the desire, the inherent desire of some jivas, some living entities, to turn their back on Krishna, to wish to be independent on Krishna, therefore the material world is created by him in the same way that a king or a government may create a prison. And then it's not that the king or the government, their whole energy is on the prison and making the prison work. No, it goes on more or less automatically through the energies of the governors. So the workings of nature are not going on automatically. It is only because the Lord glances over the material energy that it acts in wonderful ways, just as a lodestone causes a piece of iron to move here and there. So although the Lord doesn't have his full energy on the prison house of the material world, still the prison house of the material world works upon his energy in the same way that the prison house within a state is still based upon and dependent upon the energy and the power and the order of the governors. So the living entities are placed in the material world. Why? Because of their own desires. And then they are placed under the control of the Lord's material energy, which moves under His supervision. In the final verse in this chapter. So all this energy that was described previously of the material world that was described in the prayers of Aryama to Matsyadev, dear Mother Earth is saying that material energy which is being maintained by the Lord, it is resting clearly upon His energy. And it is only created, so the question is asked, as Prabhupada said, why is this material world created? It's because the living entities have an illicit, improper desire. So this chapter concludes, and these prayers of Mother Earth to Brahadev concludes with this prayer. My Lord, as the original boar within this universe, You fought and killed the great demon Hiranyaksha. Then You lifted me, the earth, from the Garbhadaka ocean on the end of Your tusk, exactly as a sporting elephant plucks a lotus flower from the water. I bow down before You. Thus then the Bhaktivedanta purports of the 5th canto, 18th chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled The Prayers Offered to the Lord by the Residents of Jambadvip. So the next set of prayers are the first are contained within the first 8 verses of chapter 19, and they are Hanuman offering prayers to Lord Ramachandra. So we certainly won't be able to finish reading them all today. So who? Because now we're going to hear who that Lord is. Who is that all-pervading Lord that is so powerful? By His energy, even though His mind isn't fully on the material world, is being the entirety of the material world is being supported by Him. How much power is there? We can't estimate clearly. But yet He's not there in the material world. He's separate. Now, who is that person? Who is that Lord? So there's going to be something upon Him in the process of seeing Him personally, spoken by Hanuman. That we'll hear next. His worshipping of the Lord. Thank you very much. Any questions or comments?
Hear about Krishna or Vishnu who's taking the different like non-human forms. Taking the Charitamrita mentions that He actually appears in every species. Is that something we can take literally?
Well, I've heard different explanations of that. I do believe that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, whose glorious appearance day it is, or disappearance day it is today, he has said that the meaning of that is that there are the different incarnations begin with Matsya. There are different divisions of different species. So in that sense, He appears in each species. Yeah, like that. But sometimes Prabhupada has indicated every species, but whether He means the 8,400,000 species or the species according to the modern way of collecting, it's hard to tell. But as far as I know, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur described it in that way. But certainly no one can say that the Lord can't appear in a form if He wants to, but whether He does or not is another question. That's my understanding, though, that He appears in those species. But it's a question that it comes up every once in a while. Any other questions or Comments? Okay, go ahead.
Is it another symptom of Kali Yuga that the prison is no longer for correction of the prisoners, but just simply shelled out to private companies for...
Maybe Krishna is going to do that with the different material universes to privatize. But still, in both cases, they're dependent on the authority. When there's privatization, it's still dependent on the authority of the government. So it's like us owning something in a country. We own it, but actually we don't own it. We're the secondary proprietor. And ultimately everything remains under the ownership of the government, of the country. That's actually the way it works. So similarly, we may own something, we may have so many possessions, but we're ultimately only secondary proprietors, and we only have it for a short time. So in some senses, it's fairly parallel. Even when there's privatization, it still depends on the authority of the government. They can revoke it at any time. Only when they say, you do this, then is someone able to do it. And similarly, when Krishna empowers a living entity to be able to do something, only then can the living entity do it. And the things that he can do under the empowerment of Krishna are everything that everyone does do. Only Krishna's sanction allows us to do anything in the material world. So he's the Anumanta. Upadrasta Anumanta cha bhakta bhakta maheshwara. Anumanta means the permitter. You had a question for me?
If Krishna is infinite, that means he's always been present even before the world was ever there.
And then he was bored one day and he created jivas, and then something went wrong like that. No, it wasn't like that. And he didn't want to open a hobby shop or get into crossword puzzles, so he created the material world. No, son, it is not like that. It was a Sunday afternoon, and it was, like most Sunday afternoons, quite boring. And he thought, what shall we do today?
But it wasn't like,
I'm joking. Oh, yeah. It wasn't like that. Just like as soon as so the jivas were never created, and the material world is eternal. But it's eternally manifest, unmanifest, manifest, unmanifest. Because as soon as there is the greatest, or God, there is also his part and parcels, the jivas, the individual souls. As soon as the sun exists, there are sun rays instantaneously, immediately. So as soon as Krishna exist, which is eternally, immediately the jivas exist. And as soon as the jivas exist, there's the misuse of desire, which means the material world is there also. So it's all of these things are eternal. What isn't eternal is the karma of the living entities, but the material world itself is eternally existent in that sense. But yet, this is a philosophical puzzle that finite souls cannot really understand, actually. Yes.
Wait,
let me... I'm sorry. Yeah, so
kind of, if I was like a happy God, if I was a happy God, I wouldn't need anything.
But that's taking Alan's mental conception and imposing it on God, which is, we have a finite conception, and opposing that. It's like a child. Like when a child's 3 years old, what ability does he have to understand what his parents are doing? He has none. Practically speaking, he may think my father is punishing me because he doesn't like me, or he may think that he's working for this reason or working for that reason. But he actually has no idea how they're thinking. He has no ability to understand how they're thinking. So similarly, we have no ability to understand Krishna unless we can only understand what he reveals to us. We are like children. We are finite. We are limited. And basically what we're doing is projecting our own consciousness and trying to understand by thinking, well, if for me to create the material world, that would mean... This is a philosophical question. That for you to do something, it means that there is a desire in you. And a desire means that there is a lack of something, because if you had everything, you wouldn't desire. So the implication is, for God to create the material world, he desired to create it, because he couldn't have created without desiring to create it. And because he desired to create it, it means he lacked something. But Krishna doesn't work like that with Krishna. And also, when Krishna, another way to look at it is that we are not separate from Krishna, nor is Krishna, the material world, separate from Krishna. That's what's being explained. So what's going on is Krishna dealing with Krishna in one sense. So it's all within Krishna's self in one sense. So therefore there's no question of having to go outside of oneself for happiness. That's another way to look at it. You follow that one? Because there's nothing separate for him, so he's not going outside of himself for happiness. So if he's happy he's happy within himself. But this is a particular form of his self. The material world is his energy. The living entities are his energies. We're not separate from Krishna. That's another way to look at it. But truly we can't understand fully, because we're so tiny. Therefore, almost in every prayer, everyone says, when we're talking about the greatness of God, then they end their prayer by saying, I offer my respectful obeisances. Not challenging him, but understanding he's great and we are tiny. I think we better stop, because it's late. It's after 8. So tomorrow, if Krishna allows, we continue and we hear about Hanuman's prayers. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srila Gopi Manandir.